Welcome to the Wealth Setting Podcast. I'm your host, John Pugliano, the money manager and founder of InvestableWealth.com. Today is September 7th, 2014. This is episode 24. Each episode of the Wealth Setting Podcast is focused on helping you attain your personal freedom by helping you build, preserve, and grow your wealth. In today's show, we'll be ending our three-part series about jobs. We've been talking about jobs all this week in honor of Labor Day. Well, we'll wrap that up in today's episode, where we'll be discussing the finer points of helping you increase your earnings power. Before we get started, I wanted to welcome all of our new listeners. I know many of you are listening in for the first time because you heard my interview with Joshua Sheets over at the Radical Personal Finance Podcast. Well, thanks for stopping in and checking out our show. And likewise, I want to encourage my listeners, if you haven't heard Joshua Sheets before, stop over at his website and check it out. That's the Radical Personal Finance Podcast. He interviewed me on episode 54. He's highly educated on all things dealing with finance. I think you'll enjoy his perspective. And again, welcome to all of our regular listeners. I appreciate all of you, and I'm especially thankful for those of you that have made an effort to go out and subscribe in iTunes or to leave a comment there. The ratings there really help us get this message out and increase the size of the audience. But hey, let's get started on today's topic. So all this week, in honor of Labor Day, we've been talking about jobs. We started out our discussion by giving you some ideas about how you could find the job or the career that you were really interested in, what you really felt that you wanted to do for the rest of your life, a career that would make you happy, a job that would be fulfilling. So that was two episodes ago. And then from there, we advanced the idea to how do you actually get that job. So that's what we covered in the previous episode. Once you know what you want, what are some strategies or techniques that you could use to go out and land that job or get the next promotion, or perhaps reinvent yourself, or look for that second career after you retired? I summed up searching for a job and wrapped it up into four topics. That was in our previous episode. If you're thinking about switching jobs, or you're currently looking for a job, make sure you've listened to this previous episode. That's episode 23. Now today, it's all coming down to earnings. How do you get paid for what you're worth? How do you either get your employer to pay you what you're worth, or as an entrepreneur, how do you position yourself, how do you position your company to make the profits that you feel you deserve? Well, let me first start out by saying that earnings are critical. From our study of the wealth building principles, we know that building wealth is a three-step process. You have to earn, then you have to save, and then you have to invest. If you're not earning, if you don't have a surplus of cash flow, then there's no way you're ever going to save, and then you're never going to be able to put that nest egg to work for you by investing. So that's why the earnings part of this equation is so critical, and that's what we're going to discuss today. As our regular listeners know, I like to break everything down into simple formulas. So when it comes to your paycheck, that too can be broken down to a simple formula. The amount you're getting paid is not happening randomly. You're not getting just what your boss thinks you're worth. You're not receiving just what your boss thinks he can get away with paying you. You're not getting paid that amount because the rich, nasty, upper 1% wants to hold you down. You're not getting paid the amount you do. You're not getting paid the amount you're receiving because some politician set some wage rate in Washington. You're receiving the amount you do because of the perceived value that you're providing to the marketplace. So in this episode, we're going to talk about two things. First, we're going to talk about how the marketplace values labor. And then secondly, we're going to talk about the perception. Because the amount you're being paid might not represent your actual worth. Just like a stock, you may be over or undervalued. Remember, the price of a stock is ultimately dictated by its earnings and the perceptions of the future earnings of that stock. That's why stock prices fluctuate. A stock is undervalued when investors are inaccurately forecasting the future earnings of that company. For whatever reason, they're discounting the price of the stock because they believe that company will be earning less in the future. When the perception changes and it's announced that the company made more than what the perceptions were, then the stock price will go up. And oftentimes, it goes up into being overpurchased. It's overvalued. Investors are becoming complacent. They're thinking that future earnings are always going to be that high. And so they overvalue the current price of the stock because they're overestimating future earnings. That's how a stock can be inaccurately priced. Now, as investors, we love that because we like to look for opportunities where the price will fluctuate. That's how we can make a profit, by determining the real value of the stock based on whether it's been overbought or oversold. So you as an individual worker, the amount that you're being paid, the labor rate that you're receiving, you likewise could be underpaid. Or for that matter, you could be being overpaid. So what we'll be doing in today's episode is first explaining to you the earnings equation so you can try and estimate whether you are overpaid or underpaid. And then once you have a better idea of your market value, We'll wrap up this discussion by helping you change your employer's perception if, in fact, they're underpaying you based on what your market rate should be. So let's talk about the earning equation or the labor equation. Everything comes down to value. And like I said, we can break it down to a simple equation. So here's the earnings equation. This is how all labor is paid. It's three simple things. Let's break them down. You're paid based on the amount of time it takes to train for your position, plus the skill and performance level that you operate at, plus the demand for what you do. So let's review that. Your earnings are based on training time, plus skill and performance level, plus demand for what you do. Now let's break down each one of these and talk about them individually, and we'll start out with the amount of training time. You see, if you're a minimum wage worker at a fast food restaurant, and you're only being paid minimum wage, one reason you're being paid that low of an hourly rate is because of the time factor that it takes to train a fast food worker. Generally, someone working in a restaurant can be trained within a few hours or certainly within a few days. That's a very short transition time. It doesn't require high skill level. It doesn't require high education level. Your employer can easily replace you by taking a few hours or a few days and training someone else. So the amount of time required to train for a job is a key factor in what your pay scale will be. That's why a carpenter or a cabinet maker or some kind of skilled laborer that works with wood is paid more than the minimum wage. That skilled craftsman is paid more than a fast food worker because you can't become a woodworker or a skilled craftsman or a mechanic or a machine operator or fill in the blank there, right? Any of these cut type of skilled labor, you can't just learn that in a few hours or a few days. To become a skilled laborer, a skilled worker, or a skilled craftsman, it takes weeks, months, or years. And each corresponding longer period of time of training, that particular craftsman will be compensated higher. So an apprentice woodworker will be paid less than a journeyman carpenter. It's just the law of economics. And it applies equally well to white-collar and professional services. A cardiologist, a heart surgeon, a brain surgeon, a plastic surgeon, a radiologist, all these skill levels, all these specialty doctors will be paid more than a doctor that simply does general family practice. And the reason for that, again, is because of the training level. The family practice doctor, with his medical school and his residency, let's say it took him an additional 6 years, but to be a cardiologist, perhaps it's another 12 or 18 years. So that's how that works. Part of your earnings equation are going to be based on the amount of time it takes you to train for your position. Fast food workers, a couple hours. Skilled craftsmen, months to years. Highly skilled craftsmen or white-collar professionals, it can take decades of training. This training dichotomy greatly affects your salary. And again, I want to stress, it doesn't have to be a formal education. A skilled craftsman can be highly compensated, but that's also because he's highly trained. I know men that work at auto body shops. Now, these are employees. They're not the owner of the shop. They have very little formal education. Several of them are immigrants, and they have very poor English language skills. However, these men are highly compensated. They make in excess of $100,000 a year, and that's because even though they have poor English skills and no formal education, they've trained themselves to be excellent car painters. They've developed a skill to be able to mix colors, to be able to mix paints, to be able to very quickly and very proficiently spray paint a car and add great value to that car. Because they've taken the time to educate themselves, to be able to work in a paint booth and to be able to spray paint a car so much better than the average person would be able to do, they are highly compensated. And they're highly compensated because they can easily demonstrate their proficiency. They don't need a diploma. They don't need a degree. They don't have to show some type of certification of training. All they need to do is walk into a paint booth, mix up the paints and the lacquers and the top coats, and show that they have proficiency with the spray gun and produce a great-looking paint job on a car. They can demonstrate their proficiency in 15 or 20 minutes. They can go into a new employer and say, "This is what I can do," and spray it out, and in 15 minutes or an hour later, they've showed their worth. It's very easy for an employer to see that. It's very easy for an employer to know their skill level. And so that's why they're so highly compensated, even though they don't have formal education. They're also so highly compensated because that training didn't occur overnight. It took them a long time to be able to develop that skill. It's also probably part talent, right? It's not only a skill that they trained for, but it's an ingrained talent that they have. And because the owner of an auto body shop can't simply go out on the street and find somebody that he can easily train to paint cars, he has to pay these highly skilled painters $100,000. And remember, they can demonstrate their skill very easily. So if he's not paying his employees what he should be, they can easily walk across the street to another auto body shop and quickly demonstrate their proficiency and get a higher paid job there. That's why they're making $100,000. So training is critical, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a formal education. Okay, so let's get back to our earnings equation. The amount that your employer pays you, the amount that you earn, is based on the amount of time it takes to train you, the skill level that you bring to that job, and the demand for what you do. So let's talk about the skill level. No matter what job, no matter what occupation, there are different levels of skill. There are great administrative assistants, and there are mediocre administrative assistants. There are highly creative and very talented musicians, and there are mediocre musicians. There are highly talented surgeons, and then there are mediocre surgeons. Okay, I don't want to belabor the point, but you can see what I'm trying to point out. Just because you've made it through a particular training process doesn't necessarily make you proficient in the job. So whether you're the fast food worker or whether you're the rocket scientist, you had to go through a particular training period. But graduation from that training doesn't guarantee your performance level. It just states that at a minimum, you can do the required tasks. So if you're a fast food worker, maybe you know how to work the cash register and give change. Maybe you know how to go out and clean up the dining room. Or maybe you know how to cook hamburgers, but only to a minimum level. And as I pointed out, every career field has the mediocre, and then it has the great. It has the people that excel, the top 10%, the top 5%, the top 1%. A portion of your compensation will be determined by how much above mediocre you are, by how much above average you are. Many people have learned how to play the game of golf, but they can't play it to the level of Tiger Woods. That's why Tiger Woods makes hundreds of millions of dollars in endorsements. Many college graduates have gone on and earned MBAs. They met the minimum requirements to have a Master's of Business Administration. That doesn't guarantee their proficiency. That doesn't guarantee that they know how to run a business. Bill Gates is a billionaire. He doesn't have an MBA. Steve Jobs was a billionaire. He didn't have an MBA. Your skill level, the proficiency that you have to complete your task at work, is a key element to how much you're being paid. So the higher skilled surgeon will make more money than the mediocre surgeon. The higher skilled pharmacist will make more money than the mediocre pharmacist. The higher skilled bricklayer will make more than the average mason. It's undeniable. So let's go back to our earnings equation, the labor equation. Your earnings are going to be based on the training period required, plus the skill level or the proficiency level that you bring to that position, plus the demand for that particular job. Now, the demand level is a little more nuanced. It might be a little more harder to understand, but it is absolutely important in that equation. We know from economics that pricing is always based on supply and demand, and that's no different than it would be for your earnings ability. If you're in a high-demand occupation, all else being equal, you'll earn more. There's a high demand for engineers, but certain engineers will earn more than others, and that will vary over time depending upon the market's need for those engineers. Electrical engineers may be more in demand than civil engineers, and consequently, they'll be paid more. Within the field of computer science, you may be an engineer that focuses on software. Another engineer may focus on hardware. During different time periods, during different needs in the economy, the software engineer may make more or less than the hardware engineer, even though their fields are very much related and they're both computer science engineers. It's just the demands and the dictates of the marketplace. Whoever's more precious, whoever's more scarce, will become more valuable. So here's where this gets a little complicated. There's a high demand for fast food workers. There's a fast food restaurant on almost every block in every city in America. So there's a demand for employees. They have to have employees working in those organizations. Even though there's a large demand to be a fast food worker, an employee can be trained in a matter of hours or maybe days. The skill level required to work a cash register or to provide customer service or to clean the restaurant, that skill level is not hard to attain. So although there's a demand, it's not highly skilled, it's easy to train, and so those workers can easily be replaced. That's why there's constant turnover at fast food restaurants, but the wages still stay comparatively low to other occupations. You can always find someone off the street to replace that employee, or a restaurant owner could purchase automated equipment to eliminate the need for that employee. For example, a dishwashing machine. If you have a machine that washes dishes, you don't need a physical employee to do it. In my discussion of the auto body shop, I mentioned painters that make more than $100,000 a year. An automotive manufacturer like Ford or General Motors, when they build cars and spray paint those cars, they use robots. They've automated that process. They don't have to hire individuals. a man or woman that owns a local auto body shop, they can't afford to purchase those complicated, multi-million-dollar, expensive spray-paying robots. So to get the skill level that's required, they have to pay their painters a great deal of money. So there's some examples of how automation can or can't replace a worker. So anyways, let's get back to demand. You see how the demand plays out. Even though there's a high demand for fast food workers, up till now they can't easily be replaced by automation. A restaurant owner can still fire a worker and easily turn around, get somebody off the street, and put that new person in the job. Their skill level will be adequate for the level of customer service that they have to deliver. So even though there's a large demand for restaurant workers, they're still not paid very much. Let's look at the other side of demand, places where there are very limited demand. Let's say that you're a poet, that you not only have a Bachelor of Arts degree in literature and poetry, but that you have a PhD, that you've trained for decades. And not only have you trained long and hard for that profession, but you've also won many awards and have gotten great recognition for your poetry. So you're well-educated and you're perceived as a great poet. However, the demand for poetry is much less than, say, the demand for professional golf. So in my other example, when I talked about the proficiency of Tiger Woods, it took him a long time to be trained as a golfer. He has an innate ability and a superior skill level than even the best golfers. And there's a high consumer demand for people that want to watch professional golf. And that's why Tiger Woods gets compensations of $100 million from people that want to sponsor him. Now you, on the other hand, that trained long and hard and have a PhD in poetry and you're well-renowned as a poet, there just is not enough demand in the marketplace as there is for professional golf. And so the chances of you making $100 million a year as a poet are very slim. Now we can bring that down to a more realistic level. And instead of saying poetry, just let's say someone that studies English, an English major. You may go to a university. You may have a PhD in English or in literature. You may be highly skilled at that. However, your job prospects, because of the demand for it, may be much more limited. And therefore, you find yourself in a teaching position, or perhaps as a technical writer or some other position where you're only making $50,000 a year and you're only compensated half as much as a guy that's painting cars in the auto body shop, even though you're much more highly educated and have so many more credentials. There just isn't the demand for the product or service that you're offering. So it's those three simple things. Your earnings power as it relates to your job, or as an entrepreneur, the product or service that you offer the marketplace, they're going to be priced either by the consumer or by the employer, by the amount of time it took to train for that occupation, by the skill level or the proficiency that you perform that occupation, and then by the general demand that the marketplace has for that particular product or service that's generated from your employment. So now that you know that equation, do some self-analysis. Look at your own position. Are you adequately being paid for what you do? Are you fairly being compensated for what you do? Given your training, given your skill level, and given the demand for what you do, are you paid $10,000 a year, or are you paid $100,000 a year? Honestly assess yourself. Now, if you are being paid the correct amount, either because you don't have enough training, or because you don't have enough skill, or because there's not enough demand for what you do, and if you would like to earn more, then the only way for you to change that equation are to change one of those three elements. If demand is a problem, you need to switch to a field that's more in demand. If education is a problem, then you need to find a way to either get more formal training or more informal training that'll bring you up to that education level, which will allow you to perform better. But if you're in a job that has a demand and you're in a job where you have adequate education, then the next thing you have to look at is your skill level. Are you really as good as you think you are? You have to be honest with yourself. Are you performing in the top 10%? Are you performing in the top 5 or top 1%? You have to perform that at that level to be compensated higher than the average employee. So if you're not performing at that level, step up your game and become better at what you do. Now, if you are performing at that higher level and you're just not being adequately compensated by your employer, or if you weren't performing at that level, but now you've stepped up your game and you are performing at that level, but for whatever reason you're still stuck at that lower pay level, then now it's a perception problem. It's a perception problem with your employer because you've got the earnings equation down right. You're in a job that has the demand, you're in a job that you're adequately trained for, and you're performing well above average, but you're still not earning what a top performer would make, or you're not earning what you think you're worth. So now this is where I want to wrap up the discussion, and we're going to focus on the perception of your employer. Once you've stepped up your game, or if you're already at that high level of performance, you need to make sure that your employer acknowledges that fact, that he is aware of that fact. For whatever reason, he may not be, but you need to point this out. You need to point out that you're his best employee, or you're among his best employees. You need to point out to him that you're performing at a level that is well and above, you know, head and shoulders, the other employees are being compensated at the level you're being employed at. And if he is not willing to accept that fact and pay you more, then you will leave him and you'll take your services elsewhere. And that's not a threat. You want to make sure that you're not lying to yourself, that you're not deluding yourself, that your skill level really is among the top employees for the type of work you do. You want to make sure that you're being compensated at below the market rate for your level of skill. And once you know that, you need to be bold and have self-confidence and approach your employer and ask to be compensated adequately. If he's not prepared to do that, you'll leave. And if you have those three things we talked about, if you have the training, if you're in a field that there's demand for, and if you're a top performer, you will have increased earnings. Compensation for value has to work. It's a law of the free market. The employer may not want to pay that wage. For example, the auto body shop owner, he may not want to pay his painters $100,000 a year. But if they're that good, if their skill level is that high, and they can demand that price from his competitors, then he has to pay them. He doesn't pay it out of the goodness of his heart. He pays them because if he doesn't, they'll quit and go work somewhere else. So it's very important that you learn this earnings equation and then apply it to your own life. Realistically apply it. Don't delude yourself. If you're deficient in one of those three areas, training, skill, or demand, then do something to change it. Take responsibility for your own income. Take responsibility for your own future. Once you know that you're a top-trained, top-performing employee in a demanding marketplace, then you find the employer that's willing to compensate you for what you're worth. It's that simple. I know this equation works. I know this formula works. I've applied it in my own life. This isn't something I've read in a book. This is something that I put into practical application and I've seen play out over my 30-year working experience. And as I've mentioned in this podcast, we've primarily been talking about a job or compensation by an employer. But the same formula works if you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to determine the price that you can charge for the products or services that your company owns. It's those same three elements of the earnings equation. So again, if your company is not earning what you think it should, take an honest look at that earnings equation and see where you're deficient. Make a change, and then go out and reap the rewards. Well, this will sum up our three-part series on jobs that we've dedicated during the week of Labor Day. There's a lot going on in the stock market right now. In our next episode, we'll come back with a market review. And now that we're in September and through the summer doldrums, there's quite a bit that's picked up in the news. So we'll also take a deep dive into the current events of the day with news and commentary. Again, if you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you haven't done so, take the time to listen to the first 10 episodes. That's where we lay out the 10 wealth-building skills, and that's the foundation and the basic precepts and principles that we use in every episode of the Wealth Studying Podcast. As always, if you have a question or a comment for me, I can be reached at wealthstedding.com. Until the next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.